Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. George Zimmerman charged with second-degree murder in the shooting death of Trayvon Martin. It is a turning point in a case that has sparked outrage and intense discussions about race and justice across this country. Zimmerman's attorney says he will plead not guilty. The facts of the case, such as they're known, and Florida's controversial Stand Your Ground self-defense law, both now in the spotlight. We're looking ahead. This hour on Point, a murder charge for George Zimmerman. You can join the conversation. Did you holler in the street for this? Are we on the path to justice here? Justice for Trayvon Martin, justice for George Zimmerman. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Yesterday at a press conference in Washington, D.C., Trayvon Martin's mother, Sabrina Fulton, thanked those who have rallied in support of her son and reached out to the whole country.
I just want to speak from my heart to your heart, because a heart has no color. It's not black. It's not white. It's red.
Al Sharpton said this is not about gloating, not time to celebrate.
This is not about gloating. This is about pursuing justice. We have not won anything. All we have done is establish that we must have the right to redress and justice in this country.
And in Florida, the special prosecutor everybody had been waiting to hear from, Angela Corey, said she decided to prosecute based on the evidence, not public pressure. Evidence that will come at trial, she said.
That's what will be in court, detail by detail, piece of evidence by piece of evidence, factual evidence, physical evidence, testimonial evidence. That's why we try cases in a courtroom.
George Zimmerman headed for that, but it's a complicated path. Joining me first today from Miami is David Adams, Miami bureau chief for Thomson Reuters. Reuters was the first national media outlet to run a story on the Trayvon Martin shooting with a piece on March 7th. David Adams, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
What comes next?
Well, we're expecting possibly a hearing at 1:30 at the Seminole County Jail in Sanford, which would be Mr. Zimmerman's first appearance. It's something that his attorney could decide to waive, but it's a pretty pro forma legal appearance, and possibly there could be a discussion about bond. The attorney, Mr. O'Mara, has said he would like to get Zimmerman out of jail as soon as possible so he can work on his defense.
Bond, that would be out on jail if that's the way it goes. There was so much speculation, David, about where George Zimmerman was. Even, you know, he's in Brazil, he's in Peru. Do we know now where he turned himself in? Where had he been?
We don't know exactly where he had been. His previous legal representatives had said that he was not in Florida, but he turned himself in, we believe, in Jacksonville sometime maybe early yesterday or the day before, and then was transported overland to Sanford last night to the county jail and met briefly late last night with his new attorney, who's an experienced Orlando criminal defense attorney.
What are the next steps then as this moves forward? We're told that a judge still has to look at whether or not the case being brought can get by the Stand Your Ground law.
Well, it's very likely that Mr. O'Mara, Mr. Zimmerman's new attorney, will file a motion to dismiss the case against his client on the Stand Your Ground issue. And that could result in a hearing, possibly within a couple of weeks, where a judge will decide if the immunity that is offered under Stand Your Ground applies in this case.
You're there in Miami, Trayvon Martin's hometown. What's the reaction been there and around Florida, David?
Well, I think there's a certain amount of relief that now finally an arrest has been made and charges or a charge has been filed. A certain amount of surprise that the charge was so severe, second-degree murder. That is a pretty high bar. It requires for the prosecution to convince the jury that there was malice in the crime. But it could at the same time be a tactical procedure by the prosecution, and they could indeed settle for something lower, maybe through some kind of plea negotiation.
If there's an early evidentiary hearing with a judge, and that judge decides that there is or a preponderance of evidence that Zimmerman acted in self-defense, understand your ground, could he dismiss it right there? Would that be the end of it? Is there appeal if a judge would do that?
He would be obliged. If he found that stand your ground applied, he would be obliged to grant Mr. Zimmerman immunity from arrest or prosecution.
If that doesn't happen and it goes to trial before a jury, is there talk about where that might happen?
Well, again, the lawyer for Mr. Zimmerman could apply for a change of venue. That's something that would probably be considered, according to lawyers I've spoken to, quite a reasonable request given the nature of this case and the excitement that it has caused, not just obviously in Sanford, but elsewhere.
It would stay in Florida?
I would assume it would stay in Florida. There are plenty of places in Florida, I think, where this could be handled quite satisfactorily. But that would happen. That would be something that would happen further down the road, closer to a trial.
David Adams, Miami Bureau Chief for Thomson Reuters. Reuters, the first national media outlet to run the story of the Trayvon Martin shooting. It had been talked about. It had been there had been plenty of social media, but for big national news organization, they were first, and we remember that. David Adams, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Here's the state prosecutor, Special Prosecutor Angela Corey again, saying yesterday that the decision to charge George Zimmerman was based on law and the facts, not on pressure.
Let me emphasize that we do not prosecute by public pressure or by petition. We prosecute based on the facts of any given case, as well as the laws of the state of Florida.
Okay, fair enough, but it came after weeks of very high-profile pressure. Joining us now from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, is Florida State Senator Chris Smith. He's incoming State Senate Minority Leader, represents Fort Lauderdale, and he's leading a task force of state lawmakers convened after the Trayvon Martin killing to look into Florida's Stand Your Ground self-defense law. Senator Smith, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
What's your first, just your emotional reaction to the fact of these charges now, Senator?
Well, I was in D.C. yesterday when I got the news that the charges were being leveled, and it was relief, more of the sense of what the charges represent and the signal it sends out. My fear this whole time was fear that other people would think that this is acceptable behavior, just the facts that we know of what's transpired, the going and not listening to the dispatcher and proceeding to basically take law into your own hands. I didn't want people to perceive Florida that way, and I didn't want other Floridians to perceive that that is justifiable behavior. So the charges being filed at least sends a signal to everyone else that this is not, the way we want to conduct ourselves.
Angela Corey, the special prosecutor there, saying that these charges have not come about on the base of public pressure, but wow, it took a long time. We see a police chief suspended. We see another prosecutor taken off the case. I mean, do you buy that?
No, I mean, she wouldn't have been there. She wouldn't have even been conducting this investigation had it not been for the pressure and the national attention put on the state of Florida. The mere fact that she had to come from Jacksonville to conduct this shows that the pressure did force them to at least take another look at it.
And do you expect in Florida that we're going to see public demonstrations go on during this trial, or are people likely to sit back now and watch justice take its course?
I'm not sure that you're going to see demonstrations. A lot of my constituents and people, and of course, I've done a lot of forums and had a lot of discussions with constituents since it happened. I think that the big relief was at least charge him, at least make Mr. Zimmerman stand before a jury or a judge or someone and actually defend his actions, not just to a police officer on the scene. So the mere fact that the charges were brought and there is a chance he has to stand before someone and at least defend his actions of taking a life have taken away the angst of, I'd say, half the people that have been out there. Now, the other thing that you brought up that would be a concern is if it is just a hearing in front of a judge and the judge applies, you know, the Florida statute and dismiss the case, then I think you're still going to have some problems, but not as bad as people think. I think the actual charge relieved a lot of people's concerns that, you know, how dare this guy not even get charged.
Do you think that George Zimmerman can get a fair trial in Florida after all of this publicity and passion?
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to find a jury that hasn't, you know, heard about the case or that's not intimately involved and don't have emotions when it comes to this case. I believe in the legal system. I'm a lawyer by trade. However, I'll admit it's going to be tough to impanel enough people that don't know enough about the case.
I mean, at this point, everybody must know about it. So what do you do in that case? Do you go for a panel of, I don't know, just you mix it up by race? You try and get as far as you can from Sanford? How do you handle that?
Well, everyone's going to know about the case. So when you're doing the voir dire and they're asking, everyone's going to know about the case. But you just try to find those citizens that said, you know what, but I'll keep an open mind. I mean, I know I've heard about this case. I know about what's going on. But you know what? I haven't heard the rest of the 911 tapes. I haven't seen the physical evidence. I haven't seen in-depth pictures of Zimmerman. I haven't seen, you know, Otto Talented and stuff. So you can find some people, even though they've heard about it, that, you know, will admit, I haven't made up my mind about it.
Well, Trayvon's own mother, Sylvia Fulton, speaking very graciously on the Today Show today about the shooting death of her son by George Zimmerman. Here she was.
I believe it was an accident. I believe that it just got out of control, and he couldn't turn the clock back. I would ask him, did he know that that was a minor, that that was a teenager, and that he did not have a weapon?
Out of control, accident, those are kind of two different things, Senator Smith, but that was pretty gracious of the mother.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you can see from the charge, I mean, it wasn't a murder one charge. It didn't go to a grand jury and get a murder one charge because I don't think anyone believes that, you know, Mr. Zimmerman took his gun in his hand and left his house saying, you know, I'm going to track down somebody and kill them. So, I mean, in that point, and that kind of goes to my earlier statement of, I think people at least wanted to see an arrest. And his own mother shows that in her being gracious.
Chris Smith, stand by. We're looking at the arrest of George Zimmerman, the charges. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we're talking this about the charge of murder in the second degree against George Zimmerman in the death of Trayvon Martin. It came yesterday. We're looking at what finally brought that charge and where the case, the saga, really goes now. Here, this was yesterday after news came out against George Zimmerman. Supporters of Trayvon Martin gathered for a special church service at the Allen AME Church in Sanford, Florida. Reverend Jabari Paul spoke.
Father, we thank you for everything that you have done for us.
Yes.
Most of all, we thank you for this day.
Yes.
We thank you for the news that we heard on this day.
Yes.
Father, that one step towards justice has been taken.
Now we'll learn a lot more, we suppose, about what happened that night, though it's going to be tricky. The attorney for George Zimmerman, the new attorney, the criminal defense attorney Mark O'Mara, spoke yesterday about the state of mind of his client in these last weeks of uproar.
I cannot imagine living in George Zimmerman's shoes for the past number of weeks. It's only because he has sort of been at the focus of a lot of anger and maybe confusion and maybe some hatred, and that's got to be difficult.
Charges. A lot of questions here. Are we on the path to justice? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Do you trust the legal system to now get it right? Why did it take so long for George Zimmerman to be charged? If it weren't for the outcry, would he still be free? And will Trayvon Martin get justice here? Will George Zimmerman get justice here? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Senator Chris Smith is with us, Florida State Senator representing Fort Lauderdale, heading up a task force to look into Stand Your Ground and its impact in this case and many others. Joins us from Fort Lauderdale. Also with us right now to look at the legal matrix that we're headed into here, Monique Houghton Worrell is with us, professor of law and director of the Criminal Defense Clinic at the University of Florida. She formerly practiced law in Sanford, Florida. Monique Houghton Worrell, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And with us from NOVA, Southeastern University in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, law professor there, joining us from the studios of WLRN in Miami, Hugh Mundy is here. Mr. Mundy, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Good to be here.
Professor Houghton-Worrell, let me come first to you. Just looking at this case, do you see a clear path to anything here, or what is the prosecution up against?
Well, it's certainly not going to be a clear or easy path to a conviction. Initially, upon my review of the facts as I know them through the media, mm-hmm. pretty much the same as everyone else, I initially had reservations as to whether or not this case would end in an acquittal, similarly to the Casey Anthony case that caused so much uproar.
Why did you have those reservations? What did you see?
Because it's reasonable doubt. The standard by which Mr. Zimmerman has to be tried is reasonable doubt. And even if the prosecution gets past the hurdle of the stand your ground law, and that's a big if in and of itself.
You mean with the judge before it even goes to jury?
Before it even gets to a jury, even mm-hmm. if it passes the initial phase of the judicial hearing for the stand your ground, there's still going to have to be evidence presented beyond a reasonable doubt that he was not using self-defense. Because even if he passes the stand your ground point and goes on to a trial, he can still assert self-defense as a defense. And the jury will be instructed to decide whether or not he used a justifiable use of deadly force. And of course, the big problem here mm-hmm. is that the only other witness to this incident is not with us.
Trayvon Martin, shot on that night and dead. Professor Mundy, on that night, George Zimmerman walked away. He was let walk free by the police. What are the implications or the consequences of that for forensic evidence here? How thoroughly was the site, surveyed and all the sort of detective work done in the immediate aftermath of the killing?
Well, I think that's an important point. The decision not to charge Zimmerman on the evening of the incident really prevented the kind of evidence gathering that would normally be done in this kind of case, and that's going to be an issue for the prosecution.
Is there, half of what you would normally have, a tiny fraction? Do you have any sense at this point? Do we know?
I don't think we know. I don't think we know what evidence the prosecution has. Certainly yesterday at the press conference, there was a suggestion that the prosecution had gathered evidence that hadn't been disclosed. And, of course, they have no obligation at this point to mm-hmm. disclose what they have.
Mm-hmm. So we will find out. We've got a lot of questions from our listeners and observations here. Let me get a call from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Ben, thanks for calling. Ben, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a police officer in Pittsburgh, and I was looking at this case, and it seems to me that murder, any murder, as long as it's called murder, requires malicious intent, meaning he would have to have known that he was killing someone and he'd have to have known it was a crime at the time. So it doesn't make sense that they would charge with murder, except for the fact that almost all cases get plea bargained, like 90%, and they might be doing this in order to get him to plea down to manslaughter.
Putting the pressure on George Zimmerman to plea out, Monique, what do you think?
Well, in the state of Florida, second-degree murder does not require necessarily a malicious intent, but rather, reading from the statute, it says, when perpetrated by any act imminently dangerous to another and evincing a depraved mind regardless of human life, although without any premeditated design to affect the death of any particular individual, is murder in the second degree. So it does not require for there to be a malicious intent or an intent to cause the death of the individual, just reckless regard for human life.
Is that what a depraved mind means,
depraved,
Professor Mundy?
Mind, yeah.
Yes, essentially, that's it. And it does seem like a bit of a reach here to charge Zimmerman with second-degree murder. But I agree with your caller that this gives the prosecutor leverage to engage in plea negotiations, also because of the mandatory minimum in a second-degree murder case. There is no mandatory minimum in a manslaughter case. So if they choose to negotiate a plea for manslaughter, they have much more flexibility in crafting a sentencing recommendation.
Second-degree murder, it would be 25 years to life would be the range.
That's
a lot of leverage to bring on to George Zimmerman if he's looking at that or you know, that possibility or something, a lesser charge and much shorter. Professor Mundy, is that fair? Is that typical in our court system?
Well, I think it's typical. I mean, the interesting aspect of this case is you sort of at the front end have unfettered prosecutorial discretion to not charge, and now we have unfettered prosecutorial discretion to overcharge. I think that is typical because it does give the prosecution the opportunity to negotiate sort of a middle ground that still brings a hefty prison sentence.
But Senator Smith, what do you think it's going to take for the public to feel that justice has been done here? That's a pretty wide range we're looking at already, from 25 to life to possibly manslaughter and a much shorter term to maybe, you know, being, you know, set straight free by a judge before there's even a jury trial. What's it going to take to clear the bar of public expectation or desire for justice, Senator?
I think at least a jury of our peers, a jury of citizens, and I'm just talking public opinion, not legally, but public opinion, at least him explaining his actions to citizens and having them make a decision. I do have concerns if it's just the stand your ground hearing in front of the judge. I have concerns whether that will soothe, you know, the public pain and make people think that it was, you know, we got a fair shake in the judicial system. So short of a jury, I think you're still going to have concerns. But as I said earlier, the initial arrest is huge in soothing some of the concerns of Floridians.
Let's hear from our listeners again. Bruce in Essex, Massachusetts. Bruce, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You have some politician with you who is already grinding his axe to attack the stand your ground law. Now, the thing that puzzles me in this, and perhaps you can give some facts here, it's the law is portrayed as one that says that if you assault somebody and he resists your assault, as Trevor did, that you have a right to kill him. I find that hard to believe, that the language of the law in Florida or any of the other 23 states says such a thing.
Well, you're saying George Zimmerman assaulted Trayvon Martin and Trayvon resisted, and then George, it's been depicted in...
The difference between assault and battery are legal terms. Assault is approaching, if you approach somebody in a manner that causes them to fear for their physical well-being, you are committing the crime of assault.
I mean, we've had this question raised on this show about who should stand your ground apply to here, George Zimmerman or Trayvon Martin. We weren't there, but what about it, Monique Houghton Worrell? What exactly does it say, stand your ground? And what about our caller's observation?
Well, you see, the thing about stand your ground is that it is almost as if it's a dance going back and forth between the two individuals. So stand your ground says that a person is justified in the use of deadly force and does not have a duty to retreat if he or she reasonably believes that such force is necessary to prevent imminent death or great bodily harm to himself. Now, there's another section that follows that talks about use of force by an aggressor, which would be contemplated in this case because many believe that George Zimmerman was the aggressor. But the problem here is
aggressor
that
because he might have been perceived as following or menacing Trayvon that evening.
As the caller said, that he may have perpetrated an assault by putting Trayvon Martin in fear because of his following and menacing. But the problem here is that in Chapter 776, it says that the justification described in the preceding section is not available to a person who initially provokes the use of force against him, unless, so it goes on to say, unless that person becomes involved in an interaction and then cannot escape death or great bodily harm once trying to retreat from that situation. So it's going to be a back and forth to find out really what happened here and whether or not stand your ground will apply to George Zimmerman.
The special prosecutor speaking directly to that yesterday as she announced the second degree murder charges and saying that if George Zimmerman's lawyers invoke Florida's stand your ground law, prosecutors would challenge it, she said, as they have in many other cases.
We fight hard. Some of them we've won and we've had to appeal them, or the defense has appealed and we've won it on appeal. Some we fought hard and the judge ruled against us. That's happening to prosecutors all over the state. It is the law of the state of Florida and it will be applied.
Chris Smith, Senator Smith, I know you're looking at this large scale, but Hugh Mundy, how do you see the nuance of stand your ground playing out in this case?
Well, I agree that a primary issue is going to be whether Zimmerman was the initial aggressor, and therefore stand your ground wouldn't apply unless he withdrew and indicated a clear intent to Martin of his withdrawal, and Martin continued or resumed a use of force. So I think that's going to be the primary issue. I'm wondering whether at the stand your ground hearing this case will even move forward, because I believe that the standard the court must use is a preponderance of the evidence
right.
at the initial stand your ground hearing, which just means it's more likely than not that Zimmerman was within his rights under stand your ground, which is certainly a much lower standard than proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
Let's hear from our listeners. Huntsville, Arizona. Hank is calling. Hank, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi, Hank.
You know, everyone just been talking a lot about justice and how justice must be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think the media has just taken this and just started running full force. And, you know, everybody has just, you know, followed behind with tongues hanging out of their mouths. And, you know,
For what, Hank? For what?
What's your question?
Well, for what have people been panting with tongues hanging out of their mouths, are you suggesting?
Well, you know, they just want to get behind a cause. They just want to feel like, you know, they're worth something, and, you know, they feel like they can make a difference. And, you know, I just think this whole case has been blown drastically out of proportion.
You think that George Zimmerman should have been arrested, should have been charged with murder?
No, I believe that the police officer on duty that night more than likely did his job, and justice has already been done.
Appreciate your call, Hank. Senator Smith, what do you say to that perspective?
Yeah, and that's kind of my point. I couldn't be more opposed to what he just said. I think the public outcry was the fact that it was only a police officer on duty that is perceived to have making the choice. Taking a life is something serious. When you take a life, and I think the outcry has been that if you take a life, at the very least, you should have to stand up and defend your actions in a court of law of some sort. But if someone takes a life of anyone, and I mean take race and age and everything out of it, if someone takes a life, I think the outcry is, okay, now defend your actions. And I think the public outcry has been to have him have to publicly defend his actions.
But isn't the whole point of stand your ground that you don't necessarily have to go to trial? Isn't that the whole point of the Florida law as it stands?
And that's the problem with the Florida law as it stands. And I mean, axe to grind or not, I just think if you take a life, you're talking about a dramatic event. Someone's dead. The very least you should do in a civilized society is have to defend your actions of taking that life in a more professional manner than just, you know, telling a officer on the scene, an officer on the scene having the ability to grant immunity.
Jack in Toronto, Canada. Jack, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. It seems to me, I wasn't there, of course, when it happened, but it seems that a defenseless teenager was gunned down by an armed man. And I find this stand your ground law an absurd form of legislation which encourages vigilantism and lawlessness, and it should be repealed as soon as possible in order to avoid another killing of a Trevor Martin.
Jack, I appreciate your call. Monique, here we are. This is the law of the state of Florida, though, right now. Senator Smith and others are looking into whether it should be changed or repealed, but this is the law that makes a tight sort of eye of the needle here, doesn't it?
I couldn't agree more with the senator and with the last caller. There is a problem with this law, and not that it will lead to lawlessness, because this is the law. So the actions that have taken place under this law are actually legal. As a society, I think we really need to look at what value we place on another human life. There have been a tremendous increase of homicides that then have been let go as justifiable use of homicide, and the state attorney's offices have not been able to prosecute them because of this stand your ground law. And the more people become familiar with this law, the more simple arguments between two individuals could end up in the death of one with the use of justifiable homicide as an excuse. I think it really is appalling that as a society we grant individuals the right to end the life of another citizen based on perceived fear or disagreement even.
George Zimmerman, very likely to go to trial, though we don't even know that for sure yet. It will go before a judge first on stand your ground consideration. Stand your ground itself may be on trial in the public arena here. Monique Houghton-Worrell, please stand by there at the University of Florida. Professor of law there, Hugh Mundy, at Nova Southeastern University, law professor, and Senator Chris Smith. We're looking at the charges. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the charge of murder against George Zimmerman in the death of Trayvon Martin, what finally brought the charge, and where the case, the saga, goes now. Senator Chris Smith is with us, incoming Senate Minority Leader in the Florida State Senate. He's leading a task force investigating Stand Your Ground and where that ought to go, that whole law in Florida. First in the nation, now many states have it. The NRA pushed it and others, and here we are. Hugh Mundy is with us. He's a law professor at Nova Southeastern University in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Joins us from the studios of WLRN in Miami, Florida. And Monique Houghton-Worrell joins us from Orlando, professor of law, director of the Criminal Defense Clinic at the University of Florida. She formerly practiced law in Sanford, Florida, where it all went down. You can join the conversation this hour. What's your question on the law, the case? What are we learning in this saga? Will Trayvon Martin get justice here? Will George Zimmerman get justice here? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. And boy, if you haven't visited our website, it is just exploding with comments on this. All kinds. Judy says, she says, I think it's beyond pathetic it took this long to have a prosecution. Jack says, as a Floridian, I want more than an arrest. I want a conviction for murder. Ian says, if the case had been properly investigated from the get-go, we would not be talking about it today. Greg says, good luck getting a fair trial for Zimmerman. He's been convicted by many already. 800-423-8255 is our number. Nancy in London, Connecticut. You're on the air, Nancy.
Hey, thank you. My point is that George Zimmerman seems to me a ticking time bomb, and that any black young man was in danger, and that he was that this law emboldens people like George Zimmerman to actually gun down people. And so therefore, I think the murder charge is correct. And I don't know how this works out legally, but psychologically, George Zimmerman was a ticking time bomb.
What about those looking at his own testimony and his father's, what he told the police? He said, look, I was out there. Yes, we'd had burglaries in the neighborhood. I was out trying to keep track of things, and I ended up getting attacked.
Well, that's a good story, but I hope dearly that that will be disproved in court, that the phone call that was made, that Trayvon was on, will prove that he is totally lying.
Nancy, I appreciate your call. Let's get one more right here. Trey is calling from Birmingham, Alabama. Trey, you're on the air.
Good morning and hello to everyone. I just wanted to say concerning the 911 call that was made, where you hear in the background some pleas and cries for help, help.
Yeah.
And then you hear the gunshot and then the help cries are silent.
Mm-hmm.
And also the thought about just, you know, if that's anybody's child was put in that situation, regardless of the race, your child, my child,
mm-hmm.
what we want is justice. And I mean, we would want the murderer of our child arrested no matter what race we belong to. And those are just some things that I wanted us to really also consider. And I appreciate the time.
Trey, we appreciate your call. Let me ask you, if I may, Trey, now that that has happened, there is an arrest, there are charges, a murder charge here. What's your level of confidence that justice will be done?
Okay, well, justice being done, I hope and pray that it will be done. But now justice being done, I know that it's a process. And so I think based upon the solid facts of evidence is what we need to uphold the law with. The solid facts will speak for themselves, and we leave our personal emotions out of it and just weigh the case based on the facts. I think that everything goes proper.
Trey, you're very judicious, and I appreciate your call. The special prosecutor spoke to this issue of the whole racial surround to this yesterday. Reporter asked about racial overtones in the case, and she talked about, categories of people who might be involved. And she talked about B for black or W for white or H for Hispanic, I guess. But she said what she's interested in is simply V for victim.
We only know one category as prosecutors, and that's a V. It's not a B, it's not a W, it's not an H, it's V for victim. That's who we work tirelessly for.
Humunde, will everybody be able to keep all these outside dynamics out of the process, out of the courtroom?
Well, Tom, the fact of the matter is that we prosecute young African-American men at six times the rate of whites, and that as a young African-American male, you have 1 in 3 chance of going to prison. That is that 1 in 3 African-American young men will wind up in prison. So to some extent, the prosecutorial priorities, both at the state and federal level, fueled George Zimmerman's perception that Trayvon Martin was suspicious or dangerous. So I question how race cannot factor into this equation, because the way that we prosecute cases in this country to some extent creates the perception that young African American men are dangerous.
Well, some legal the system itself maybe with some culpability. Frank in Boston, you're on.
Yeah, I just want to say it's intellectually dishonest of your African-American guest that 90% of interracial crime is black on white. That if you look at a case, even in Dorchester, there was an immigrant shot dead and by a 16-year-old mustard-color-wearing hoodie assailant who's going to stand trial for shooting two Asian-Americans who were 20 and 21. He was 16 at the time. And I think that having a representative like Bobby Rush from a high crime area going in the House of Congress with a hood on is an absolute disgrace if I was an African-American.
90% black on white? I mean, I don't know those figures, but I wonder about that.
FBI, go to the FBI interracial statistics on crime. You will find that 90% of crime that is cross-racial is black on white.
Oh, cross-racial. Well, Senator Smith, what do you say to that kind of observation contextually here?
Well, I'd have to look at those stats, but I really don't see... I'd have to look at those stats. That's kind of hard to believe. But the mere fact that we're talking about a case in which, and remember the context of where we are. We are in the South. I mean, we are in the South, and the South is replete with history of whites killing blacks and not being arrested or anything. I mean, you go from the 20s to now, and so that's the first mentality you're dealing with, and it just brings up all those old images of Emmett Till and others and seeing the assailants walk free. And so, I mean, that's the only time I would bring up race, really, in this issue, is to give some context of this is why the African-American community is upset. And I went on your website, and I see people are bringing up the issue of what about a black man shooting another black man? I mean, where's the outrage? Now, the outrage is the images of Emmett Till and others here in the South. Florida's still the South. And to see the killing of a black male and the person that did it, still walk free.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the image you were dealing with. And so I would excuse some of the emotions of a Bobby Rush, who, by the way, Emmett Till, who was beaten to death, was from the area where Bobby Rush is from.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would kind of excuse some of those tactics when you think about the Byron De La Beckwiths, you know, who shot, you know, Medgar Evers and walked free for 40 years till finally. So, I mean, you got to kind of excuse some of that in the mentality of people. And your caller from Boston, he can just look back a couple of decades at the Charles Stewart case where he killed his wife and the police went, you know, in the black community and began to crack heads and get people to confess to a crime that ultimately showed that they didn't do it. So, I mean, you got to excuse some of the antics because we are dealing with that mentality and the memories of people.
Everybody brings their own frame here, and we're hearing that, but the frame of history is very heavy. Murfreesboro, Tennessee. John, you're on the air.
Hi there, Tom.
Hi.
Just to correct that statistic, actually, if you look at the study by the Department of Justice, 86% of white murders committed by whites and 94% of African Americans are committed by 94% of African Americans are committed by African Americans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the point was just now made about that, but I guess for me, I understand the problem with it, but if 94% of African Americans are killing each other, we're putting all the attention and all the focus on 6% of the problem. And what do we have to do to get on the other side as well, on both sides?
Well, I take that's your point, John. I mean, that's a fair point. But here, you know, you have a dead young man, 17, who happened to be African American, and it's hard to get away from that as well. Let me get a couple more, if I may, John. Thank you, Ed in Niagara Falls, New York. Ed, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Tom, I'm a 69-year-old African-American male.
Yes, sir.
My parents, because of the condition in the South, I was born in Montgomery, Alabama, my dad gave up a business. He was in business, moved his children to Niagara Falls to get us away from the racial hatred and the experiences that we had in Montgomery, Alabama. Now, I think it's appalling, even on your program here today, that we're talking about a standard gun law when what has clearly happened was if Zimmerman turned and saw a white youth of 17 walking there, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. He saw an African-American youth. He saw a black. And he thought it was his responsibility as this citizen to take this action to the point where that young man is dead today. That's appalling to me that everyone is trying to frame this around some stand your ground law. It's clearly racial.
I mean, we do know it's on the 911 tapes. George Zimmerman saying this guy looks like he's up to no good or he's on drugs or something. Well, on what basis? He was out for iced tea and Skittles. But then, Ed, I take your point, but there is this law in Florida and many other states as well. Well, look at that. Let me get one more here. Tony, thank you, Ed. Tony in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to bring up one point that nobody else seems to have, and I don't think that this may have happened if it had been a white kid. It might have happened if it had been a black kid. But Bill Cosby brought up a great point. And that was the fact that this guy was on neighborhood watch, and he was carrying a gun. If he had not been carrying a gun, he had the "I'm carrying a gun" mentality.
Yeah,
he would not have got out of his car and followed this black kid who was 6'3" or whatever.
Yeah.
Had he not had a gun, being on neighborhood watch, I do not believe. I think, you know, the law as it stands is fine, but for the gentleman to have Zimmerman to have a gun and be on neighborhood watch, that allowed him to have the extra bravery or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah,
I don't call it bravery, but
the predilection.
I have a gun.
Yeah, the readiness. Tony, we got that. The gun was in his belt, and once that's there, boy, the callers are so good. For, Hugh, Monique, let me get just a couple more. Chris Hunter in Providence, Rhode Island. Hunter, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think, Hunter?
I just want to touch on the fact that everybody is getting way too focused on the racial aspect of it. A gentleman just called from Niagara right off the get-go. He just brought race into it. He said there's no doubt in his mind that it was racially motivated, and I think...
Well, he's 69 years old, and he's African-American, and his family had to leave the South. I mean, wouldn't that put race on one's mind, Hunter, I guess?
It could, but I think they need to focus beyond that and look at the cold, hard, concrete fact of the situation, because with the media saying Zimmerman's a white guy. First of all, he's half Peruvian. Never mind. It's just the way people are being forced into this situation, it just seems like race is inevitable when race really shouldn't be part of the problem. We should be looking at the facts, the evidence, and not being...
Well, that's what the special prosecutor... That's what the prosecutor says she'll do in the court. We'll see how that goes, but I appreciate Hunter. And the last one, Andre here in Evansville, Indiana. Andre, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. In reference to the caller from Alabama who said the media was took off with this, got carried away or whatever, I just want to disagree with that. I think in this particular case, the media did its job acting in its role as watchdog. And I also think that there's just so much brought into this, but what it boils down to is, you know, if I'm out and I run over someone while I'm changing my radio station, and that person dies, I should have to defend my actions. You know,
mm-hmm.
I should be in court.
And let alone a killing with a gun. All right, there's quite a range of perspectives on this. Monique Houghton-Worrell, I mean, you teach the criminal defense clinic here. As you look at this case, what do you think is going to be the critical point here? As first judge looks at it, and then if it goes to jury, what is it really going to come down to? Is it whether or not there's a cut on the back of George Zimmerman's head in that police station video? Is it what is it, Monique?
Tom, if this makes it to a jury, I think that the critical pieces of evidence that are going to make or break this case for the prosecution are going to come down to what forensic evidence they were able to recover when she came in and conducted her investigation. So, yes, is there a broken nose or isn't there? Is there a back of the head that is so badly injured that it would support that his head was being pounded into the ground, and the only thing that he could do at that point to save himself from death was to shoot and kill Trayvon. The autopsy report of Trayvon Martin, mm-hmm. are there aggressive wounds on his body that show that he was punching and hitting George Zimmerman prior to being killed? The telephone call, whether or not it can be analyzed to really pull out whose voice was screaming for help mm-hmm. prior to the gunshots. Any eyewitnesses who actually saw the encounter who have not come forward because of fear or whatever other reasons that there are. So there's a lot of evidence, or perhaps lack of evidence, that we are not aware of. And I think that the case will hinge on that evidence in the event that it goes all the way to a trial. And without those key pieces of evidence that I mentioned, I think it's going to be very difficult to obtain a conviction.
Well, it sounds like the stuff of real investigation, real justice. I mean, I'm glad at least we're down to that. Professor Mundy, you agree it will come down to forensics?
Absolutely, and that gets back to your initial question. The prosecutor's decision at the outset not to make an arrest and commence an investigation that evening may be a fatal blow to its case.
And Senator Smith, lastly to you, you're investigating Stand Your Ground itself, the Florida law in so many other states. We've just got half a minute, but what's your goal here? Are you looking to overturn Stand Your Ground? Do you think that will be a legacy, might it be, of the Trayvon Martin case?
Not overturning, but at least amending and defining. I think the Trayvon Martin case and the legacy of it shows the absurdity of someone not having to go and defend their actions. And I think that's the biggest point. Both professors have talked about, you know, by nothing happening that night, you lacked forensic evidence and things. And I think that shows that we at least need to revisit the Stand Your Ground so that proper investigations can be done from the onset.
Florida State Senator Chris Smith joining us today from Fort Lauderdale. Thank you so much, Senator Smith.
Thank you.
Hugh Mundy at Nova Southeastern. Professor Mundy, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
And Monique Houghton-Worrell at the University of Florida. Thank you, Professor Worrell.
Thank you, Tom.
Big conversation at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.